Tecnocasters es patrocinado en parte por MCC and Worry. MCC and Worry, call center y mercadotecnia aplicada. Visítenos en www.mccwaren.com.mx.
Hola, me llamo Maximiliano y estás escuchando Tecnocasters.
Transmitiendo simultáneamente desde los Estados Unidos y México, el mejor podcast de tecnología en español. Esto es Tecnocasters.
Conducido por Juan de Dios Guevara, Lorena Galán, Pedro Riverol y Raúl Mitre.
A partir de este momento, conectamos todos tus sentidos al mundo de la tecnología. Comenzamos.
¿Qué tal? ¿Cómo le va? Muy buenas noches, soy Juan de Dios Guevara y sea usted bienvenido al episodio 7 de Tecnocasters para septiembre 23 del 2009. Hoy estamos de fiesta, estamos muy contentos porque, bueno, tenemos hoy a Pamela Gay de Astronomycast. Hello, Pamela, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, how are you doing?
We're doing good, we're happy to have you here. Vamos a estar cambiando el podcast entre inglés y español el día de hoy. Le vamos a platicar un poquito más adelante el porqué. Y por lo pronto, y como siempre, presento a nuestro equipo de trabajo, la señorita Lorena Galán.
Hola, buenas noches a todos.
¿Cómo estás, mi Lore? ¿Qué has hecho de tu vida?
Pues nada, Juan, ya sabes, lo mismo,
¿verdad?
Nada,
bien. El señor Pedro Riverol Arellano, ¿cómo estás, Pedro?
Muy bien, un poco agripado, pero todo muy bien, muchas gracias.
You have the flu.
I have the flu. I don't know where I get it, but I think I'm getting well.
Well, you know,
soon.
I think you sound awful, but you know, we love you anyways.
Yeah.
Así que bueno, ni modo. El señor Raúl Mitre. Con Raulito, ¿cómo estás?
Willing and able. No, listo. Gracias, Juan. Bueno, muy contento. Bueno. Hay muchas cosas que platicar. Muy animado, como siempre. Ya es el programa 7. Y listos para lo que sea mejor.
Bueno, qué bueno. You know what? I'm going to say this in English, Raúl. I got like a couple of emails to Tecnocaster saying that you have a very sexy voice. What are these women thinking? ¿Qué piensan estas mujeres?
Well, they got good taste. What can I say, my friend?
Yeah.
Oh,
whatever.
My God.
Whatever.
Sí,
exactly.
Muy mal, ¿eh?
¿Qué puedo? Si no tengo que... Solo tengo que decir gracias.
Humildad. Humbleness gracias. Is your word. Okay. And obviously, we have Pamela Gay from Astronomycast visiting us today. Hello, Pamela.
Hello. I wish I spoke more Spanish, but thank you all for your patience with my English. I love being here with you all.
So, I have a question for you. So, what kind of words do you know in Spanish? Can you tell us a couple?
I know agua. No hablo español. Por favor. Very, very little.
You know how to say beer?
No, sadly I don't, but I do know how to say tequila and margarita.
Claro. Okay, very good. Bueno, pues como
estudiante. Okay, so she won't die if she comes to Mexico.
No. If she goes to Mexico, we're going to make sure that she's treated like a queen.
I'd love to make it down. You have some of the most amazing archaeoastronomy relics in the world in your country.
Vamos a tener que hablar alrededor de 22 preguntas esta ocasión para poder permitir que, bueno, Pamela nos acompañe el próximo mes. Le recordamos que va a estar con nosotros una vez al mes y todas las preguntas que nos vayan llegando y las que vamos a dejar en el tintero esta ocasión, vamos a guardarlas para el próximo mes. Pero por lo pronto escogimos las 20 preguntas que vimos que eran más relevantes y las vamos a ir contestando en inglés porque Pamela, como ya le explicó a usted, bueno, pues está aprendiendo español. We have to give you, Pamela, a Rosetta Stone. So we can, next month, maybe you can speak a little bit with us in Spanish, huh?
I'm sure there's an app for that, and I'm going to find it to my iPhone to do a crash course.
Después nos vamos a platicar sobre las preguntas de la audiencia. Por ahí tenemos comentarios, preguntas de la gente que nos están enviando a preguntas@tecnocasters.com. Pedro Rivero nos va a platicar sobre un sitio de internet para hacer presentaciones así como que wow, keynote y PowerPoint, ¿verdad, Pedrito?
Espero les guste, si no me avisan.
Y luego tenemos al señor Raúl Mitre, el hombre de la voz sexy según dos mujeres. y un camino. Nos va a platicar, ¿de qué nos vas a platicar hoy, Raulito?
Pues tenemos un par de noticias interesantes, tanto de el mundo de la música y iTunes, y además el nuevo Zoom HD, que tenemos ahí un review interesante de cómo funciona, cuánto cuesta. Está interesante el tema, lo van a, les va a gustar.
Bueno, muy bien. Pues le agradecemos, como siempre, la preferencia a Tecnocasters. Llevamos 2,000 descargas a nivel mundial.
¡Wow! Muchas gracias.
Eso.
That's fabulous for seven episodes.
Thank you very much. Y les agradecemos la preferencia. Les recordamos que se pueden suscribir a este podcast en iTunes y totalmente gratis. Ahí nos encuentra, se suscribe. Y su iPhone, su iPod Touch, su computadora, etcétera, automáticamente que exista un episodio nuevo, lo va a bajar. Y si no tiene o si quiere hacerlo directamente en su computadora o escucharlo en su celular, en su dispositivo móvil, se puede ir a www.tecnocasters.com. A ver, señor Mitre, platícanos sobre la nueva línea de Tecnocasters para Estados Unidos, Canadá, Europa y Latinoamérica.
Como mencionaste al principio de este programa, la intención es poder cachar todas las dudas, comentarios o sugerencias que ustedes puedan tener, con la intención de ponerlas, platicarlas, discutirlas y hacer la investigación que esto requiere. Entonces, estamos habilitando dos líneas de teléfono. La primera para los Estados Unidos, Canadá y Europa, que es el 1-478-227-8377. De hecho, es un Google Voice Number, funciona bien, trátenlo desde Estados Unidos, Canadá y Europa. O en México y Latinoamérica, este es un teléfono local en México, ya tendremos también la oportunidad de hacerlo 800 para que no les cueste. El teléfono local en México es 53-21-6363 y ya funciona, así que a marcar.
Los invitamos a que nos dejen un mensaje, es importante, les pedimos que nos dejen un mensaje con su nombre, pregunta o comentario y de dónde nos llaman. Les recordamos que al dejar un mensaje nos dan autorización de publicarlo en Tecnocasters y todas sus emisiones afiliadas. Y les recordamos también que nos reservamos el derecho de editar el mensaje para la conservación del tiempo. Y como lo prometimos, la voz sexy de Lorena Galán lo invitará al número de Tecnocasters, ¿verdad? A ver, Lore, ¿cómo sonaste en la voz? A ver, ¿nos puedes dar un preview?
No, que sea sorpresa, que hable claro, para que lo escuchen. Claro, claro.
Ah, que sea sorpresa. Ok, bueno, muy bien. Bueno,
y ¿qué solo para recordar también, Juan, nos pueden seguir en Twitter, Tecnocasters, la palabra completa. Ajá. O en Facebook también, que tenemos nuestra fanpage en Facebook. Síganos y también son foros donde pueden hacernos preguntas o poner cualquier cosa que les interese.
Bueno, pues muy bien, la página, el fanpage de Facebook y luego Twitter. Fíjate que nos falta algo en Friend Feeds, ¿no, mi querido Raulito? A ver si podemos, ¿cómo
razón
ves? Friends Feed, como que sí, de repente nos a lo mejor nos convendría tenerlo por ahí. Pero en fin.
Sí, y es un consolidador al fin del día de este tipo de medios. Entonces, no es problema implementarlo. Prometo que la semana que entra queda listo y able.
Una vez al mes vamos a tener a Pamela Gay con nosotros. We're going to have Pamela from AstronomyCast once a month. And we're going to be switching back and forth in English. The case of Pamela, because she's so cool. She has an outstanding podcast, and you can actually subscribe to her podcast in astronomycast.com, and you can follow her on Twitter.
Yes, Star Strider with a Y.
So we're going to be switching back and forth in Spanish for this podcast. Después vamos a seguir continuando nuestro formato original en español siempre, pero debido al calibre de invitados que tenemos, Pamela Gay es una de las mejores astrónomas del mundo, en pocas palabras. Así que bueno, vamos a tener que ayudarle. Ella no habla el mejor español del mundo, sin embargo, bueno, le pedimos su paciencia. Recibimos un montón de preguntas interesantes, así que le pedimos que en este podcast por única vez nos dé la oportunidad de poder hacer el podcast en inglés y en español para que Pamela pueda seguir con nosotros.
Ok, Pamela Gay es una astrónoma norteamericana, miembro de la Facultad en Astrofísica de la Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, así como en la Swinburne University en Australia. Su principal afiliación es la de asistente auxiliar de investigación en física en dicha institución, Southern Illinois University, donde es maestra de física y astronomía. Sin embargo, sus intereses profesionales, así como responsabilidades, son de rango y alcance internacional. Pamela, además de ser escritora, es mundialmente conocida como una de las conductoras, en conjunto con Fraser Kane, de la emisión semanal de astronomía AstronomyCast. Recibió su doctorado en astronomía en la Universidad de Texas, en Austin, en el 2002. Ella actualmente es miembro del Consejo Directivo de la American Association of Variable Star Observers, así como la codirectora de medios de comunicación emergentes relacionados con el Año Internacional de la Astronomía 2009.
Hey!
Thank you so much for having me. I don't know how to follow up such a wonderful introduction. Thank you.
The first question for Pamela, PC or Mac?
Mac.
And why?
Yay.
Well, I started out as a Unix programmer. I'm an old school command line GNU libraries programmer. And a lot of the software I run runs best under Linux. But I love Adobe products. I love Microsoft products. And I can have the best of both the Linux world and all of the really cool mainstream software if I'm running an Apple Macintosh.
All right. Well, there you go. Now, the second question is Star Trek or Star Wars?
Can I take option C, Battlestar Galactica?
Wow. All right. Okay. This is a new one.
That's a new one, yes.
This is a new one. Okay. All right. And why?
Well, the Star Wars, I loved it up until they came up with metachlorine. And then I kind of lost it. It was just like, wait, that wasn't there for the other three movies. Where did these come from? And Gene Roddenberry imagined a wonderful future that is filled with happy people and no poverty that I don't think we will ever acquire.
Okay.
But Battlestar Galactica has people struggling with religion, struggling with philosophy, struggling with technology. It addresses a lot more of the human situation, and I like that darker, edgier, relevant to our own real lives way of writing and telling the story.
All right. Okay, well, Battlestar Galactica, and the original series or the new one?
When I was four, the original Battlestar Galactica, it was my favorite show, and it stayed my favorite show until I was like 12.
Right.
And now that I'm older, I have to admit, it's just not quite as cool as it was when I was a little kid. And so
yes,
now I love the new show.
¿Qué te gusta más, el iPhone o el BlackBerry?
iPhone. I love my iPhone.
Sí, o sea, nos va a disculpar la gente. La verdad es que, bueno, y no lo platicamos, no nada. Las respuestas son honestas. I mean, we're not staging this. The answers are completely honest. She loves the iPhone. I'm sorry for the BlackBerry guys. I'm sorry, but once you go Mac, you never go back.
It's totally true.
And the iPhone is a great gadget. It's a really great gadget.
Okay, iPod or soon?
My iPod. When I'm gardening and don't want to have my iPhone out in the yard, it's totally my iPod.
Okay, and what kind of iPod do you have?
I actually have one of the old generation ones that did no video, did no color, and it just gets the job done, and I use my iPhone the rest of the time.
Bueno, pues ahí lo tiene. Pamela le gusta evidentemente la Mac, evidentemente. Battlestar Galactica, esa sí fue nueva para mí, ¿eh? Nunca me imaginé. Yo me acuerdo hace, pero, I mean, that show has been forever. I mean, forever. What was the name? What were the name of the robots with the weird looking?
Cylons.
Yes. I love the voice of the Cylons. I mean, it was very cool.
Yeah.
They were good.
I have an action figure of the Cylons when I was a kid.
And what happened to it?
I think he dies under the hands of some G.I. Joes.
Okay, bueno, pues muy bien. ¿Por qué la astronomía? ¿Qué es la astronomía para ti? ¿De dónde viene la pasión por la astronomía? Y una pregunta muy importante que nos llegó es, ¿tú crees que la astronomía o la ciencia es tu forma de conocer al Creador?
At the end of the day, it was the one thing that would never bore me, always interest me. And it's something that will actually inspire people. And I never got bored. I tried other things. I tried physics. I tried computer science. I tried international relations. And I always went back to astronomy. I've been doing this since I was five. I've read little kid astronomy magazines, had a telescope since I was in the seventh grade. Well, now I have binoculars, but I've had binoculars or a telescope since the seventh grade, and I just kept going. And it's not a way of getting closer to knowing my Creator. I am a Christian, but it's a way of more appreciating all the details in the universe. One of the most amazing things about science is it works. We have the ability to look out and understand. And the more you understand about the universe, the more complex it is, the more amazing it is that everything worked out to get us to the point that atoms stay together, protons don't decay. We have planets that are sometimes the correct distance from stars that have bigger planets like Jupiter protecting them from oncoming comets. There's so much in our universe that just worked out that at a certain point you look at all of the just works out and it becomes a magical whole. Sometimes you have to stand up and say, look, this is what I believe in, but it's possible to still be a scientist. It's possible to still understand the scientific method and use it every day. The two don't have to be completely separate. There are more struggles. A person who's a Christian and a scientist gets attacked by both sides. The Christians are like, wait, how can you believe in the Big Bang in some cases? And in some cases, you have the scientists going, wait, how can you believe in God? And it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. One of the best planetary scientists that I've met in terms of being able to explain things is a Jesuit who works in Arizona in planetary science, Guy Consobal. And the Jesuits run some of the better observatories in the world. There's no disconnect between the science and the religion. It's fine with the Catholic Church. It's fine with many of the Protestant churches. But the most vocal people in both the atheist movement and the Christian movement are often the ones that have the most extreme viewpoints. And anything taken to an extreme starts to become dangerous. And there's a lot of people, I think, that simply aren't willing to say what they believe.
Bueno, pues vamos con la siguiente pregunta. El famoso programa SETI, The Search of the Extraterrestrial Intelligence, La Búsqueda de la Inteligencia Extraterrestre. ¿Qué es? ¿Cuáles son las probabilidades de que el SETI encuentre una transmisión perdida en el cosmos? ¿Qué es la señal WOW o cuál fue la señal WOW? ¿Fue cierta o fue una leyenda urbana? ¿Y cuáles son las implicaciones de encontrar vida extraterrestre en otros planetas?
This is one of those things that it's not an urban legend. It's true. Back 32 years ago, August 15th, 1977, the Big Ear telescope in Ohio picked up a strange signal. It lasted 72 seconds, but that's because the telescope was moving across the sky and it was only pointed at this one place in the sky for 72 seconds. And in every way, the signal looked like the type of signal that we predict we will see if we observe some sort of a radio signal from an extraterrestrial source. For all these years, people have been trying to figure out what it was. They've pointed telescopes at the location they think the signal came from over and over and over again. And we've never heard it a second time. People try explaining it as maybe it was some sort of a cosmic effect. Maybe it was a signal produced naturally in space, just something that we've never seen before. You get flickerings in space, random events that light up for a moment and then fade away. Maybe it was an alien civilization that at that moment beamed a signal directly at Earth and we just happened to pick it up and they haven't wasted their time or their energy sending us a signal ever since. We don't know. The most likely scenario is it was some sort of natural one-time event that the telescope just happened to pick up. But it's still an open question. We don't know. And so people keep looking. They keep going back. They keep trying to explain it. The strange part about this was the telescope, the Big Ear, it had two different detectors. And what they would have expected is each detector, 3 minutes apart, would see the same thing on the sky. And so if it was a constant source, if it was something that was constantly shining towards us, we would have seen 72 seconds of signal, then 3 minutes later seen another 72 seconds. But we only saw the one 72-second signal, and that's what's so tantalizing. If we can't explain it, it's mysterious, and we only saw it once.
Now, what do you think are the real odds of SETI picking up really a transmission in the cosmos? Do you think we're going to see that in our lifetime?
I think we are more likely to detect alien civilizations by looking for the pollution they put in their atmosphere. One thing that we're already able to do is with the biggest planets we observe, we can measure what's in their atmosphere. We can see water. We can see other gases. We haven't found a planet like Earth yet, but we're very close. We were just starting to launch the types of space missions, the types of space telescopes that can see planets not very different from Earth. And once we start finding those planets, and once we start looking at their atmospheres, I think we'll see planetary pollution before we ever see radio signals. But it's worth it because we just might get lucky. And it's much more interesting to hear somebody's conversation than to see the chemicals they put in their atmosphere.
¿Qué opinas tú sobre el equinoccio del invierno de 2012? ¿Es cierto que el Sol va a estar directamente alineado con el centro de la Vía Láctea? ¿Va a haber, en tu opinión, alguna repercusión gravitacional o de otro tipo para la Tierra?
This is one of those things that I think is driving all astronomers crazy. Rumors spread all over the internet and crazy websites get built that take people's money and teach them things that aren't true. And this is one of those things that isn't true. Our solar system is moving so slowly around the galaxy that if we were worried about lining up with the Earth and the Sun and the center of our galaxy, it already happened many times in the decades around 2012. We'd have the same alignment over and over and over because the center of the galaxy is a really big place. And we're not actually lining up with it on 2012. There's a bunch of NASA sites that talk about how you run the models. Nothing's lining up. It's not a problem. Okay. The real thing that's happening is the Maya calendar is ending one cycle, starting a new cycle. This isn't the first time this has happened. The Mayan calendar has repeated itself several times, many times in the history of the Earth, and we're still here. This is just one more cycle beginning. So instead of looking for doom and gloom, celebrate a chance to start the Mayan calendar all over again. It's like the year 2000 one more time.
And Juan, if I may, Pamela, I got a follow-up question on this one. Does this 2012 thing has to do something with the swivel or the wobble of the axis of the Earth?
Well, our planet is constantly changing its orientation very, very slowly. The North Pole Star, Polaris, it won't stay the North Pole Star forever, but it will become the Pole Star again. This is another cycle that's going on all the time. Now, one of the crazy internet rumors is that the Earth is going to suddenly change its orientation or that this has already happened. But if that happened, the stars you see at night would radically change. So as long as the stars still look like the stars you saw yesterday, don't worry. And there's no physical reason that would ever happen.
So pretty much, the world will not end on 2012 by cosmic reasons, so pay your bills. ¿Qué agencia gubernamental en el mundo hace los estudios de los asteroides u objetos cercanos a la órbita de la Tierra? ¿Estamos seguros? En el caso de un impacto posible, ¿qué tanto tiempo por adelantado podríamos tener?
As an astronomer, this is one of the scariest things about our universe. It's trying to kill us. We used to think that impacts on planets were rare. We saw back in 1994, Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 hit Jupiter, and we thought that was a once-per-500-year event. But this year, another object hit Jupiter. And so we now know this is common. NASA and Japan and many smaller centers around the world are watching the sky. There's a near-Earth object discovery team at Lincoln doing the near-Earth asteroid research, the Linear Scope Survey. There's the NEAT survey, Space Watch, Lowell Observatory has its group. There's a Catalina Sky Survey. Japan has the Space Guard Association, and there's an Asiago digital camera asteroid survey. All of these different surveys are constantly searching the sky, trying to find objects that may be one or two orbits away and passing the Earth's orbit and hitting us. We're always finding new objects. And in a few years, one is going to pass closer to the Earth than the geosynchronous satellites that send television signals down to our television. Now, one of our greatest fears is we won't get any warning. Sometimes objects are on very elliptical orbits, very oblong orbits, and they pass very close to the sun and come out straight toward the Earth from the sun, and we can't see them when they do that. Now, NASA has been charged to find, within the years, 90% of the objects that are 1 kilometer or bigger that are in the solar system and cross the Earth's orbit. We think there's probably nothing there to be found. And so there are these many surveys going on. And we're also working on building, I believe in South America, the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope, which will be a many meter large telescope that will survey the entire visible sky from that facility every 3 nights. And its primary job is to find stuff that might kill us. One of the scariest things about this is with statistics, you have the same probability of dying in an airplane crash that you have of dying from an asteroid. And that's a real problem. Now, the difference is an airplane will kill maybe a couple of hundred people, and an asteroid might kill a couple of billion people. But the probability is the same. And there are a lot of worried scientists trying to figure out how do we keep ourselves safe.
So do you think the movie like Deep Impact? Well, you know, I liked the Armageddon. It was cool. Yeah, it was Hollywood. It was good.
They saved us in Armageddon.
Yeah, yeah. We were saved in Armageddon. But
Armageddon actually would have destroyed the Earth if you did that.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. If you work out the math, also the nuclear bomb they exploded gave off similar amounts of energy as the sun. And we can't build that bomb. You don't want to blow up an asteroid. You want to move it. And this isn't that hard. But we need to see it several months ahead of time. It's possible to easily move an asteroid. We know how to do that. We just don't have the money. We haven't tested it. But there are people who've thought about it. Blowing it up just increases how many things hit the planet Earth. Deep Impact got a lot of their science correct. There will be vast damage if one does hit the planet.
A ver, Lori, aviéntate la siguiente pregunta.
¿El universo tiene algún propósito?
Besides killing us, I guess.
Well, that does seem to be its purpose when you study science. Scientists wish they could answer, but no matter how much math we do, the answer doesn't come out. Now, there is one line of theory, it's called the anthropic principle, that says the specific universe we're in seems to be designed to get to life. It would be very easy to change just a few small details and galaxies would have never formed, or we would have ended up with nothing but black holes, or atoms might not hold themselves together. And if any one thing was just changed a little tiny bit, we wouldn't be here. So with the anthropic principle, one of the things that some scientists say is our particular universe seems designed for life. Now, then they go on to say that, well, maybe we're not the only universe. Maybe there's lots of universes designed for death. But the one we're in seems to be trying to actively kill us, but at the same time has all of the physical parameters, all of the constants needed to allow life to exist. And astronomy discusses all of those fundamental questions. We can't say what caused us to exist, but we can say how we got here. We can say, what is the evolution in the future and how will it all end? We're still missing that first cause, but when you study the universe, it gives you a sense of scale and perspective. Our planet is one of just hundreds that we know about. And we can only see the biggest planets, and there's got to be small ones out there. Theories say that maybe they're even larger in number. We're just small little specks on the surface of a small little star that's going around a not an entirely average star, but there's lots of stars just like our sun. And there's so many galaxies out there. It really gives you a sense of how small you are when you look outside, and it makes the fact that the newspaper got wet in the rain seem a little bit less meaningful.
And at the same time, Pamela, it's that smallness of the human person just let us know how big we are at the same time, because we are just a spectacle of, I guess, matter and something else just floating around the universe. But that spectacle of matter has the ability and the burning desire to understand the whole cosmos. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it all goes back to the wonderful thing about if it works.
Yeah.
And we can understand it all.
Dinos por qué cualquier pelado debe estar emocionado de la astronomía.
Well, the sky is the one thing that unites all of us. And it's the one mystery that anyone can get involved in trying to solve. There are questions that small children can help scientists answer through projects like Galaxy Zoo. And one of the most amazing things about my life dealing with astronomers all around the world is I'll have conversations sometimes with friends in England, and I live 90 degrees west around the planet from Greenwich, which is at zero. So there's 6 hours difference between me and my friends in London. And there was one afternoon, one of my friends stepped outside and he's like, wow, I think it was Jupiter. Jupiter and the moon are right next to each other. It's amazingly beautiful. And I could say to him, I now have something to look forward to in 6 hours. Because as the planet rotates, we hand the stars from one nation to another. We hand the stars around the planet as we rotate from day to night. And we can do science, we can understand the stars, only if all of us work together to share our data, to share our understanding, to build a complete picture that traces through the night as it revolves around the world. And there's so much out there to learn. There's so much left to be understood. Even our sun still presents us with questions. We're still trying to figure out all the details of sunspots and solar flares and what are the types of things that lead up to amazing northern lights here on our planet Earth that are caused by something happening this season. We have left, and there are projects that allow anyone to help answer these questions. Galaxy Zoo is one of the projects we had. There is a project done by NASA called Stardust at Home that got people to help find grains of interstellar dust that were collected by a satellite. We're going to be able to understand what is the composition of stardust because of the work of everyday people helping us understand astronomy, just working at home on their computers. There's variable star work where you go outside, you look up at stars like Epsilon Aurigae, and you write down what you see and you report it either on paper or across the internet, and allow scientists to learn things they couldn't learn without every person's help. We all share the sky, and it's within all of our abilities to go out and discover the universe.
I love that answer. I just love it. I was just imagining me going out seeing the sky. It's nice. I like it. I like it. A ver, señor Raulito, could you take the next question for four?
Mucha de la gente que vive en las grandes ciudades o áreas urbanas, ¿Qué nos recomendarías tratar de observar, dadas las condiciones atmosféricas que tenemos en las ciudades? Es decir, ¿cómo deberíamos observar el cielo en una ciudad grande?
One of the sadnesses that we face is light pollution, the street lights we have on for safety, the lights we have to show off pretty architecture. All of these lights make it hard to see the stars. And the best way to not have to leave the city and still be able to move is just go up on a roof and find a way to block from your eyes all those other lights. It sounds dumb, but if you could somehow build a cardboard cylinder around yourself and look up without seeing the security lights in the city skyline, that would help adapt your eyes, making it a little bit easier to see the stars. You're never going to see a lot. But the more light you can protect your eyes from, the more you'll be able to see. And there's some really cool things that you can see if you have patience. There are some very bright stars. Myra, it's this big, bloated, giant red star. It's visible, in the northern hemisphere at least, in big cities. And over the period of about a year, it will go from being easily visible to fading out so that you can hardly see it at all. There's another binary star, Algol, that when it has eclipses, it's like it's winking at you. And this is another star that you can still see from many different city lights. Observing these stars that change in brightness is something that you can still do within a city. And it's really neat to watch starlight change. We all have, from when we're small children, this idea that stars are constant. Keats writes about it in his poetry. He says he wants to find a love as constant as the stars. No, that's a bad idea. Stars are very inconstant, and it's cool to watch them change. Binoculars, they still work from cities. With binoculars, you can start to see neat little clusters of stars, globular clusters. There's one in the constellation Hercules that you can still see from cities as big as Boston. You just have to know where to look. There's lots out there to explore, and a nice pair of binoculars and just getting the brightest lights out of your eyes will allow you to really enjoy the sky without having to go anywhere.
Pamela, when I was a kid, I was told that the stars are the ones that blink and the planets are the ones that not. That is true?
That depends on how good or bad the sky is. Stars are little tiny pinpricks of light in the sky. And planets, you can see that they're little disks when you look at them through binoculars. And if you have a nice, clear sky, then the stars won't twinkle and the planets won't twinkle. If you have a kind of average sky, then the bigger disks, you don't see them twinkling, but the stars will all twinkle. Now, if there's a storm coming in and there's high winds high up in the atmosphere, everything twinkles, just everything. It's like looking at the sky through heat rising off of a road. Just as you might see stars twinkle through a dust storm. This isn't dust. It's actually changes in temperature that bend the light and make everything appear to twinkle. But that changing quality of the air, if it's really bad, planets twinkle. If it's really not bad, stars don't twinkle. But average skies, it's completely right.
Okay. Thank you.
So usually if it's twinkling, it's a star. If it's not twinkling, it's a planet in most general conditions.
Yes. Okay. But there are exceptions.
Okay, so I can take the next question. ¿Qué está haciendo la tecnología moderna para los astrónomos, both professional and amateur? Profesionales y aficionados?
It's beating us up with data. it used to be that someone would go out to the observatory for 2 weeks and come back with a hallowed set of data that they'd spend the next years analyzing. And that was fine. But now we have robotic telescopes that are regularly gathering enough data for all the astronomers of the world, and we still can't keep up. There are satellites orbiting Mars taking image after image after image after image, and there aren't enough planetary scientists to look at every single image. And some of the most amazing things we can only find with our eyes because computers can't be programmed to find the unexpected. There was an avalanche caught falling down the side of, I think, a crater on Mars. It was found by accident. Someone was just flipping through images and saw it. And no computer would have ever discovered that. So because we have modern satellites, modern robotic telescopes, digital cameras attached to everything, we're drowning in data. And this is where projects working online, letting the public look at the images, are so important, because it's only from the help of anyone listening to this show that we're ever going to get through all of the data that the telescopes are taking. We're literally drowning in information, and it's a wonderful thing. It just means we need to ask for help. There was an incident a couple of years ago of an asteroid streaking over North America. It eventually landed and made a small hole, and people picked it up and studied it. But we were able to find it because this happened on a Friday night, and everyone was outside. It was during the football season, North American football, and people had their video cameras to record their kids playing sports. And so there were all of these reports all over North America capturing the image of this streaking light across the sky. And that's data. And when that many people see the same thing, you can't hide it. You can't make it a secret. So if we did have massive visitations, where's all the cell phone footage? And the other thing is, I have a lot more faith in our government to build really freaky, creepy airplanes than in an alien civilization coming to Earth and not accidentally showing up in all of my astronomy images. When you take images at night, you get satellites, and you know they're satellites because of how they're moving through your image. You get asteroids, you get all sorts of different stuff. We would have detected it in one of the public telescopes by now. I don't think that we live in a universe empty of other life, but I don't think that we're being visited. I think there's also a lot of cases of stupid practical jokes, hot air balloons flying at night, people launching lit helium balloons. All it takes is a tea light in a helium, well, not in a helium balloon. If you take a paper bag and hang from strings a candle beneath it, you can make it float. You can make a small hot air balloon. And if you launch a bunch of these on a windy night, they'll move like a small squadron of aircraft. And because you look at them and you see little tiny objects, you think they're really high up in the sky, and they're not. They're just little tiny bags nearby. And because you think they're far away, you think they're moving super fast. It's a really stupid practical joke, but it's the type of thing that's easy and cheap to do to people.
Por favor, danos tu opinión con respecto a cómo está actualmente la situación con respecto a la exploración del espacio.
Robots are cool. NASA and the Europeans, and we're working in collaboration with folks from India and China. We've gotten really good at building spacecraft that go out and explore nearby planets. We have the two rovers on Mars. One of them is currently stuck in the dirt. And we have basically a communication system orbiting Mars now with all of the other missions that are able to talk to each other and relay data back and forth. We're really good at exploring out to Mars and into Venus. And we're starting to get to Mercury. The Mercury Messenger mission is going to do good things. Cassini keeps sending back awesome images, and the data we got back from the Huygens probe going down to Titan was fabulous. We're going out and we're spreading the robots everywhere. And I'm not sure of the political implications of leaving small robots all across the solar system, but the images are pretty. And we're starting to build a complete suite, a complete set of telescopes. Allow us to see all the colors of light from above Earth's atmosphere.
Okay.
Chandra does X-ray. Fermi does gamma ray. We have the Hubble Space Telescope with its new visual colored light detectors and IR detectors and all the other orbiting observatories. We live in a renaissance of astronomy, and now it's a matter of finding the time to answer all the cool questions that we can now answer. And it's finding the time that's the hard part, not finding the data.
Si tú pudieras darle un nombre al primer planeta con parecido a la Tierra que descubriéramos y a la primer nave interestelar, ¿qué nombres les darías y por qué?
The planet one, I thought really hard about that. We have a tradition of naming planets after gods. There's some really cool named planets out there. There's one called Makemake after gods from different regional religions around the world. But the big planets have always come from Greek and Roman gods. And I think the first Earth-like planet I'd want to name the city. Name it basically after the god that worked to figure out, well, the Fates and the Furies in a lot of ways.
What was the name in Pamela again?
Necessity.
Necessity. Oh, I see. Okay.
Because we do need, if for no other reason, to sate our curiosity, to know that there's other rocky worlds out there. And as for a spaceship, there's a long tradition of naming things Enterprise. We named a space shuttle Enterprise. There have been ships all across the centuries named Enterprise.
Yeah, I like that.
No Galactica, though.
Galactica, well, you know, I would like Galactica, though. I'm sorry. I'm not the one being asked the question, so I apologize, please.
Well, they're maybe the first spacecraft capable of going between galaxies, should be named Galactica.
Bueno, pues ahí lo tiene usted ahí. Bueno, a continuación tenemos a alguien muy especial que quiere hacer una pregunta directamente a Pamela.
This is Alex, the new voice from Leopard. Thanks for being a Mac fangirl. I have a question for you. Will robots ever be like people? Will the computer like the HAL 9000 ever exist? Pamela, thank you. Keep your Mac close to you.
Wow.
I cannot do that, Dave.
Do you remember that? I mean, that was a great
Absolutely.
Movie.
Great movie.
Yeah. I mean, great movie.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird, but it was good.
No, good. Actually, the structure of the film is very good, and the story is very good also, yeah.
So do you think we're going to have a computer like HAL 9000?
Oh, I hope not like HAL, but just like we have dysfunctional people in society, someday we may have functional computers as well. One of the things that is rather frightening is just how much information it's possible to record. We don't know how to create personality. We don't know how to create emotion. But we have all the details of a life, and it doesn't take that much memory space. This is something that's discussed in the new Battlestar Galactica series, Caprica, is you can record all the moments of a person through closed caption cameras. They're all over one. You can capture all of the security cameras in the mall. You can basically use computers to go through and follow a person's actions and recreate their memories. And that's terrifying.
Yes,
but
certainly. So there are some things that I really don't want to remember.
Right. And think about all the arguments that you don't want the person to go back and be able to quote you word for word a decade later.
See, right. I agree.
But we may reach the point where we can literally take all of the memories of a person recorded factually and without emotion and somehow put those into a computer. And we're getting to the point that we can start to simulate neural nets not that different from what you see in rodents' brains. And we may eventually be able to get to the point that we can simulate what's going on in a human brain as well. I think we're decades from that. I think we're definitely nowhere near that reality. But once you're able to train a computer, if this happens, do this. If this happens, do this. Using all the memories of a human lifetime, you can start to recreate a human. And that's terrifying, but probably somewhere in our children's future.
¿Cuál es tu opinión con respecto a vida en otros planetas? ¿Posible, imposible o una realidad matemática, dado el número de estrellas y planetas que existen?
I wouldn't be surprised if we found microbial life on other worlds in our own solar system. I suspect one of these days we're going to find bacteria somewhere in the soils of Mars or on Titan or in the oceans of the moon Europa. There's lots and lots of places capable of supporting life. Now, that doesn't mean it's good at developing intelligence. There's a lot more that goes into creating intelligent life. And what I don't know is how long can planets typically go before they get hit with a giant asteroid or something even worse? How long a planet stays safe is part of what determines does enough stuff happen that you get to have intelligence without it getting killed off every time it starts to, well, speak. Our planet, we lost the dinosaurs. They met a rather bad end, but so far we're okay. But if we lived somewhere where there was a lot more risk, we may not have ever gotten to be where we are. So that's the one number left that we don't know. We also don't know how long does intelligence typically last before it kills itself. Humanity's almost killed itself off several times. And we can't answer the question, how often does society kill itself off? But hopefully in the next few decades, as we start to survey the stars, we'll be able to understand how often do you have planets like Earth that have companions like Jupiter? How often do you have planets orbiting stars that don't give off wild bursts of radiation? All these different safety factors we're still sorting out. I think life itself is probably just about everywhere, but intelligence, I think, is probably rare, and society is extremely rare. We have no way of detecting a society of dolphins that don't pollute their atmosphere and don't give off radio waves. So we can only guess at those societies, those families. We know that whales form families. We can only guess if they exist. But we'll be able to at least know, there's a little planet that has an oxygen-rich atmosphere. That's a world that has plants. It has a planet like Jupiter orbiting its star as well. Well, there's someplace that's safe. And maybe generations down the line we'll be able to go visit worlds like that. I don't think this is a distant future anymore.
¿Cuál es tu postura sobre la gran cantidad de dinero que está gastando la raza humana en la exploración del espacio? ¿No deberíamos gastar más en, no deberíamos invertir más en alimentar a los pobres en el mundo que en lugar de estar gastando billones de dólares en misiones espaciales alrededor del mundo?
One of the things I think we miss a lot is context. You throw around a lot of big numbers and it's like, oh wow, big number. That shouldn't have big number. But human beings can't really imagine anything bigger than a thousand. And once you start talking about billions, the brain just is like, big number. All big numbers are the same, big number. And when you look at NASA's budget, this year, their entire budget for the International Space Station to develop the Constellation program, which is the new rockets we're building, to fix the Hubble Space Telescope, all these things that we're doing, exploring Mars, exploring Mercury, the entire budget was $17.6 billion, which is a big number. Until you look at how much money McDonald's made, McDonald's revenue in 2007, so it's a bigger number now, but I couldn't find today's number. Back in 2007, McDonald's made $21.6 billion. That's about $4 billion more money on hamburgers than on space. Every 100 days, we spend all of NASA's budget in Iraq. I'd rather spend that money feeding people and building new buildings for all the ones that we tore down. We, just on light pollution, just all of the light that gets shot into space instead of actually illuminating grass and pavement, that's another $1 to $2 billion a year. Instead of lighting up the sky and making the stars harder to see, let's use that money to feed people, to give them homes. Instead of light up the sky, let's light up a house. The amount of money spent on NASA is 2% of the US budget. That means that for every $1,000 we spend, $2 goes to NASA. And NASA, that includes weather satellites. That includes satellites that allowed us to see all of the destruction of recent hurricanes, of so many different things that do benefit humanity directly. Weather satellites allow us to predict the direction of hurricanes that affect everyone. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, they're trying to help us understand how our planet is changing, and that benefits everybody. And that budget isn't part of NASA, but NASA still has to launch some of their stuff.
And we all work together and we all share resources. We don't spend enough money helping people, especially healthcare, disease prevention, just getting roofs over the heads of everyone who doesn't have some place to spend the night. But there's so much other waste. Go after the other waste. Let science dream a little bit, because we're here to inspire. And once those people have full stomachs and once those people have a home to live in, let's give them something to dream about.
That sounds beautiful.
All right. Really? I like that. I like that. Pamela, Facebook y astronomía. Hace poco hablaste sobre cómo podemos seguir el universo y la astronomía en Facebook. ¿Qué sitios y qué misiones nos recomiendas seguir?
So in terms of just sort of going, oh, that's cute. There's this little space mission called SDO. It hasn't launched yet. They're getting ready to launch. And they have a mascot. It's this little female rubber chicken. And the mission's little SDO. And little SDO has its friend, the rubber chicken. And it's just fun to hear about their adventures as they're getting ready to launch. Another two that do a really good job are the Fermi mission and the Swift mission. And these are two brother and sister spacecraft. And they actually talk to one another like brother and sister on their Facebook pages. And the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is currently orbiting the moon and giving us back pictures of the footprints from the Apollo astronauts and a lot of other really cool stuff. Searching on NASA will bring up lots of really good sites. Find the ones that keep you interested. Find the science that you're interested in. Pretty much anything NASA's put into space has a Facebook page.
Y para encontrar este tipo de información, ¿la encontramos en Facebook o en la NASA directamente?
The NASA website is giant. You can never find anything looking at the NASA website. I love NASA. Their website is hard to find things on.
Right.
If you go into Facebook and you search in Facebook on NASA, a lot of the missions will start popping up. And if you look at who are friends of people like Phil Plait and I, Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, and I have friended most of the missions, so you can find them among our friends.
Okay, okay. O sea, en concreto, lo que usted tiene que hacer en Facebook es irse a Facebook, buscar misiones de la NASA. Le van a salir ciertas opciones. Usted va a ver, puede usted ver fotografías, las fotografías en el momento que se producen por las ondas espaciales, updates de lo que está sucediendo en la misión del espacio, etcétera. Entonces, realmente es bastante, bastante padrísimo esto. O sea, el hecho de que usted pueda seguir en su cuenta de Facebook lo que está sucediendo en el espacio a través de la NASA. And is only NASA doing this, Pamela, or it's another agencies, another space agency in the world?
NASA is the most central one doing it, but Planck is on Twitter, and it also has a Facebook page, and that's the European mission that's out there studying the first light emitted in the early universe. There was a Twitter feed for the Chandrayaan mission. It was an Indian mission exploring the moon. That mission's come to an end, but the Twitter feed's still there. The Facebook site is still there. This is happening all over the world. I have to admit, I know more about NASA because I know the people. But I've met some of the people from India, and they're doing a great job, and they want everyone to know about what they're doing, too. Too many people don't realize India has an active space program. They're out exploring all around the Earth and going out to the moon. Japan has an active space program. I don't know if they're on Facebook, but many of the different space agencies of the world, the European Space Agency is out there as well, and a lot of telescopes are also communicating what they're doing as well. The Hubble Space Telescope, it has its own Facebook page. You can find all of these things. If you ever have an astronomy question and you read a magazine and you hear about a telescope mission, just search for it in Facebook like you'd search for a famous person. The telescopes are there a lot of times too. So just as frequently as you'll be able to find your favorite movie star, you'll be able to find your favorite telescope as well.
All right. Well, that's kind of cool. La siguiente es una pregunta muy interesante. Nos han preguntado, inclusive nos han llegado varias preguntas del auditorio en relación a lo que es el Galileoscope. Y las últimas dos preguntas que tenemos para Pamela el día de hoy son, la primera es, bueno, ¿qué es el proyecto Galileoscope y cómo se puede apoyar a este proyecto? Y la segunda es una pregunta que nos mandó un radioescucha de nombre Gustavo, y la pregunta dice así. Hola Tecnocasters, buenas noches. Escuché su última transmisión y me interesó la noticia de los telescopios. Estoy en la Ciudad de México y me pareció muy buena la idea de regalar estos telescopios familiares. Mis preguntas son las siguientes. Si compro el telescopio, ¿cómo puedo hacer el pago? ¿Por PayPal? ¿Por tarjeta de crédito? ¿O envío los $36? ¿O es por telescopio comprado? ¿O en general, si compro dos o tres, el precio del envío es mismo? El precio del envío es el mismo. Muchas gracias y excelente los podcasts, Gustavo. Bueno, Gustavo, muchas gracias.
The Galileoscope project is this wonderful story. Back about when people started to realize that the International Year of Astronomy 2009 was actually going to happen, that we were actually going to get the UNESCO and the UN endorsements and get enough nations of the world to join in to make this project real. The idea came that we want every child in the world to be able to afford to have a telescope. And there are some very impoverished nations. So that dream can't totally be made a reality, but we can make high quality, extremely low cost telescopes that it's easy enough to purchase and donate that there's the potential to put a telescope in the hands of everyone on the planet. And so just like with the one laptop per child, they set themselves a goal of what should it do? And they wanted the telescope to be able to see the rings of Saturn, to be able to see the stripes on Jupiter. They wanted it to be rugged enough that if you drop it, it's still fine. It's designed for the kids. And they wanted it to be $10. The one thing we're having problems with is we never got a large donor to help us out. Right now, when you order a Galileoscope, we have to wait for enough people to place an order that we can send all the money to the factory and turn the factory on. And once the factory's turned on, we're going to have to wait. And if someone has the misfortune of buying the first telescope on the new factory run, they could be waiting months. And all we need is someone to step forward and give us a few $100,000. We could then send the telescopes as soon as you get your order. But because of the world's economic situation, we just never found that person who could give us the $500,000 to do an entire run. So this is really a labor of love to make a really amazing little telescope. And they're cheap. They're the LCD right now, like I said, they're $20. Now, the shipping can get expensive. Right now, they're getting built in China. Different warehouses all over the planet to then get shipped out to local places. And at $15, $20 plus shipping, they're not that expensive. Get all of your friends together and order enough that you can the entire lot shipped to you straight from China. And that will save a lot of shipping money. Buying in bulk, that's always the end. But what's awesome about the Galileoscope project is every dollar goes into telescopes. And there's the option to buy one, get one. Buy one for yourself for $20 plus shipping. And then buy one for some kid who's never seen the sky through a telescope. And that's the price of going out to a restaurant. And this is a telescope that will last years. So instead of going out some Friday night and buying four or five margaritas, buy a couple of telescopes for kids who can now see the universe, can see the rings of Saturn, can see clusters of stars that they only imagined from looking at picture books. You can open that door up and it doesn't cost a lot. It's a great project. It's something I really believe in. And I wish the delays weren't there. We all want our Amazon deliveries 24 hours later. And this takes us back to the days of 3 to 6 weeks for delivery. Because now it's 6 to 12 weeks for delivery and sometimes longer. And like I said, it's because we just never got that one large donor that we so desperately need. But we still have hope. We're going to keep doing this and we're going to keep asking and we're going to keep hoping. And maybe somewhere out there listening can help us.
La gente que nos escucha en Latinoamérica, empresas que quieren apoyar, vamos a poner una liga en nuestro website De manera que las personas que estén interesadas en apoyar, tengamos un canal de comunicación directamente con la gente de Galileo Scope y con Pamela Gay directamente. Es una causa noble. Consideramos que es importante el poder apoyar a Galileo Scope. Consideramos que es importante el poder otorgarle un telescopio a todos los niños del mundo que quieran ver las estrellas y que quieran ver el universo. Lo decía Pamela.
Que quieran soñar.
No es tan caro. La gente en México, la gente en Guatemala, la gente en Chile, la gente en Argentina, que tiene la capacidad de poder comprar los telescopios. Así que vamos a estar presionándole, vamos a estar recordando, necesitamos poder conseguir el dinero para que se pueda realmente hacer un esfuerzo mayúsculo en el poder apoyar este tipo de causas. Now, what's the time frame, Pamela, when is going to be the Galileo Scope project over, or is it going to be constantly going on?
This is something that we desperately want. The sky is not going away when the International Year of Astronomy ends. Trying to figure out how to keep this project going into 2010, we're looking for partners to work with, and as long as the orders keep coming, we'll keep producing the telescopes and sending them out as soon as the factory runs.
Okay, okay.
Hay una empresa que se llama atravesde.com, quienes se encargan no solamente de recibir en una dirección de Estados Unidos el equipo, sino además hacen los trámites de importación y se encargan de entregar de manera directa en la dirección que ustedes pongan el equipo que compraron, en este caso el Galileo Scope, ¿no? Entonces es completamente viable, vale la pena, los cuates son serios, por lo menos las veces que lo hemos utilizado han funcionado muy bien, entonces vale la pena que traten de contactarlos en caso que se animen a apoyarlos en esta causa.
You guys are amazing. I can't thank you enough. It's a dream and it's the dream of a lot of people, and thank you for just dreaming with us.
So the shipping to Mexico or the Latin America is just $36 per telescope, right?
Totally, yeah.
That is what I saw when I looked. Now, like I said, the best thing you can do is get all your friends together, and the more you order, the lower the shipping is per telescope.
Okay.
So get all your friends together and order Galileo Scope in every Christmas stocking everywhere in Latin America.
Como regalo de Navidad, excelente. If you're thinking about Christmas, this is just the way to go. Y nos vamos a involucrar. Definitivamente Tecnocaster se va a involucrar en esta causa. La dirección, the address on Galileo Scope, it's galileoscope.org, right?
Yes.
Okay. Galileo Scope, como se escribe Galileo, el científico, G-A-L-I. L-E-O, Scope, S-C-O-P-E.org. La mejor forma de hacerlo es juntando a sus amigos, a su gente. Y ahorita lo importante es, entre más compre usted, más telescopios se pueden donar a niños que necesitan un telescopio y poder aprender y estudiar. Es una causa genial. Bueno, pues ahí lo tiene. Entonces, le invitamos formalmente a que visite galileoscope.org para que compre su telescopio y lo más importante, done un telescopio a cualquier niño en el mundo para que pueda mirar al cielo y pueda soñar con lo que es la astronomía. Bueno, pues lo invitamos a que el próximo miércoles nos escuche para la culminación del episodio 7, la segunda parte del episodio 7, será el episodio 7 y medio en donde platicamos sobre gadgets y tecnología con Pamela Gay, una de las mejores astrónomas del mundo, aquí en Tecnocasters. Lo esperamos el próximo miércoles, ya sabe, aquí en www.tecnocasters.com y bueno, en iTunes. Soy Juan de Dios Guevara, pásela muy bien, que tenga la mejor de las tardes.